Hare Krishna, welcome everyone. So we'll just briefly review what we covered in the last session. We did from 14 to 19, right? Yeah. So 14th verse, Krishna talks about what are the activities of the great souls. So what do these people do?
Always engage with chanting and devotion. The nine process of devotion.
Devotion service, okay. All the rules and regulations. So they follow the rules given by the acharyas. That gives them the determination. Because Krishna says in the verse, determination. So when we follow the fasting as given by the acharyas, we'll get determination. Especially, you know, the festival days and Ekadashi, all those things. So text number 15, Krishna talks about two kinds of people who worship him indirectly. Right? The one who thinks of as him as one without a second. Who is this people? Impersonalists. Yeah, and diverse as many?
Demigods.
And the universal form is, you know, see Krishna in the nature. Right? These are the three different people who worship him indirectly. Directly we know in 7.14, right? Like 16. Four types of people who surrender to Krishna. Distressed, inquisitive, one who wants material gain and one who wants wisdom. So he says among all of this, you know, Krishna, Prabhupada in the purport gives a hierarchy where everybody is situated. We discussed that nicely. So then text number 16. 16 to 19 he is covering about two people who worship the universal form. So how he is, you know, they can see him in nature. He is a sacrifice, he is offering, he is the healing herb, he is a chant, it is a fire and offering. Similar to that Brahma. Brahmana Arpir, that verse Prabhupada was telling. Brahmana Havir, 4.24. Then 17, verse number 17, he is telling, he is a father, support, grandsire, the object of knowledge, purifier, syllable om, Riksama, Yajurvedas. So this point about, you know, everybody is part and parcel, right? What are some of the practical points we discussed there? About father, mother, relatives. How should we deal with them? Unless they are devotees, we cannot follow their advice. Yeah, we cannot take shelter. We should not take association, intimate association. So, we can somehow figure out how to engage them, some way or the other, in Krishna service. But you know, we cannot intimately associate, you know, whatever troubles we are facing in devotional service, we cannot share. Seemingly, you know, sister, brother are so close. Naturally, you know, we have built up that relationship, right? For the period of time. So naturally, any problem, even devotional service, like my sister is in US. So somehow, you know, what else? In my life is all about Krishna only, like whatever we are trying to do. So whatever is there, that's what I have to share. Okay, I'll tell a little bit about my kids and all, but so when I was sharing this time, I was remembering, oh, this is what we talked about in the class. But anyway, she doesn't take it, she doesn't advise me anything, she'll listen. So, what else? I can only talk about Krishna properly, you know, little bit. So, yeah, another similar verse I came across in third canto, you know, when I was doing my assignment, same verse came actually, where if the question asked for the Bhakti Vaibhav is why Krishna is the dearest even for conditioned as well as liberated entities. See, for liberated entities it makes sense Krishna is dearest because they are aware of the relationship with Krishna, so they are conscious of the relationship, so Krishna becomes the dearmost object. But even for the conditioned souls, Krishna is the dearest. That's the question asked, and we from the purport we have to give the answer. So when I read the purport, Prabhupada tells in the purport that, you know, we all build relationships with our, you know, children and relatives, which all based on bodily extensions, right? We have our children because of the family and the close association, we have relationships. But actually, what do we love in them? What is affection? With whom are we sharing affection? It's not the body, right? It's a soul within, right? Because once the soul is gone, even the dearest son, we don't want to touch. With the soul is the one we are sharing that affection. And because that soul is part and parcel of Krishna, it's actually Krishna we want to have a relationship with. But somehow Krishna is manifesting through his part and parcel, and he's reciprocating our affection in so many different ways. But actually, originally, that's what we are seeking for. The soul is seeking for somehow to fulfill that relationship which we are missing from the spiritual world. No, that relationship is missing now. So we try to fulfill it up with so many temporary relationships in this world. Fill it up. Yeah. But if the, even the conditioned soul also gets awareness that these are all Krishna's parts and parcels, and slowly develops Krishna consciousness, then he will be on the path for spiritual growth. So we cannot miss Krishna actually, you know. If we feel, even in the so-called family life and all, we cannot miss that they are actually Krishna's parts and parcels. Okay, text number 18. Krishna says, I am the goal, I am the sustainer, I am the master, witness, abode, refuge, dearmost friend, most dear friend. Yeah, as we discussed the same point, he is the dearmost friend. I am creation, annihilation, basis of everything, and resting place, and the eternal seed. So we discussed in the purport, Prabhupada explained each of these points. Text number 19, then Krishna says, he's talking about how he's controlling everything. He gives the heat. Because of him, rain comes, and because of him, rain doesn't come. He is the immortality. He is death personified. So in Kutti says a prayer that even fear personified is afraid of you. No, and that, yeah, very nice way. Who knows that verse? No, that Sanskrit, English. She's talking about different prayers about Krishna, emphasizing, you know, how is nobody can understand him. So she says that even fear personified, like that means Yamaraja is afraid of you, but you are afraid of Yashoda Mata and you are crying out of fear. That thought is bewildering to me. How do I understand this? So it's very, and then she says, you know, some say you are born because of, you know, to rescue Yadava. Some say you are born because of to establish religious principles. Some say you are born because of establishing devotional principles. But nobody knows why you are born. That's the point, no? It's all mystery about Krishna. Okay. So we'll start today's section from 20 to 25. This whole section now Krishna elaborates on demigod worship. So we talked about in this verse, right? There are indirectly people worship him, right, in text number 15. So impersonalist, he already discussed. I think I should take the verses from you. Impersonalist Mayavadis, he discussed in the earlier verse, right, 13 and 12 to 13, right? 11 and 12. Yeah, so demigod worship is going to cover now. Universal form is covered from 16 to 19. Okay, others are covered in the 7th chapter. Okay, so 20 to 25, it's about demigod worship. So we'll see how Krishna is so strong, and let's see if some things penetrate our heart and it'll change our heart. Traividya mam soma paputa papa yagnairishva swarga gatim prarthyante te punyam asadhya surendra lokam ashnanti divyan divideva bogan. Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reactions, they take birth on the pious heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delights. So Krishna is talking about people who study the Vedas and drink Soma juice, aiming at heavenly planets. And Krishna is saying that they are worshipping me only actually, but indirectly. Because they are worshipping all the his administrators. Right? So indirectly he is worshipping because everything comes from him. But even though they follow this process which doesn't directly aim at Krishna, it's going to lead to purification. So any amount of sacrifice we do, even like so-called demigod worship or anything we sacrifice, that leads to purification and transcendental knowledge eventually, little by little. What will happen to them? They take birth in pious and heavenly planet of Indra, where they enjoy godly delight. So the continuing what happens after that is given in the next verse. So we'll read like few lines in the purport. I don't know, but there is some juice in the heavenly planets. You know, it's like, it's kind of like, they say nectar, kind of like a beverage. No, alcoholic. Huh?
Here it looks like they drink on the material, not heavenly planets.
Oh, here only they drink?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but elsewhere I read that, you know, in heavenly planets it's available. Those who study the Vedas and drink the Soma juice, seeking the... Yeah, that's true. That's what is available here. Yeah, looks like. Yeah, so we can read from 6th line, actual Trivedis. 7th, 8th line.
Actual Trivedis, good.
Yeah, please.
Actual Trivedis take shelter under the lotus feet of Krishna and engage in pure devotional service to satisfy the Lord. Devotional service begins with the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra and side by side trying to understand Krishna in truth. Unfortunately, those who are simply official students of the Vedas become more interested in offering sacrifices to the different demigods like Indra and Chandra. By such endeavor, the worshippers of different demigods are certainly purified of the contamination of the lower qualities of nature and are thereby elevated to the higher planetary systems or heavenly planets known as Mahar Loka, Chana Loka, Tapa Loka, etc. Once situated on those higher planetary systems, one can satisfy his senses hundreds of thousands of times better than on this planet.
Okay, so Prabhupada is talking about even in this world, right? If you see in Microsoft or Office, anyway, the surnames, you will find Dvivedi, Trivedi, Chaturvedi. Seemingly it's like surname, but actually it means, you know, their lineage must be familiar with the so many number of Vedas. Trivedis mean three Vedas. But actually Prabhupada is saying it's not a, like, you know, namesake kind of a, you know, a title. Actually, you know, the people who are really know the Vedas, they actually surrender to Krishna. Because Krishna says he is the goal of Vedas. Which verse he says that? 15:15, right? Vedaischa sarve rahameva vedyo vedantakrit vedavi devachaham. So 15:15, last two lines, he says Vedaischa sarve rahameva vedyo, means from all the Vedas I am to be known. Vedantakrit vedavi devachaham means I am the knower of the Vedas and I am the compiler of the Vedas. So as Vyasudeva, he compiled the Vedas. I am the knower of the Vedas means he knows the Vedas himself, and through goal of all the Vedas is to know him. So he says that he is the goal of Vedas. So yeah, and the point to note is even by following the Vedic system and worshipping the demigods, one gets purified of the contamination of lower modes. But one doesn't get love for Krishna. And that's very clear. At least they will come to mode of goodness. At least that much they can come. But beyond that, they have to come to devotional service to Krishna. Okay, so we can go to the next verse, text number 21. What happens after that when they go to heavenly planets? They feel, okay, I have reached my destination. Srila Prabhupada also told once, like, you know, many of my disciples are aiming at heavenly planets. He told once, because he knows the, you know, mentality and the mood and the desires, right? So, text number 21.
क्षिणे पुण्ये मर्त्यलोकं विशन्ति एवं त्रयी धर्ममनुप्रापन्ना गतागतं कामकाम लभन्ते.
When they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure and the results of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas achieve only repeated birth and death. So after their, they do some sacrifices and get some pious credits, so they go to heavenly planets and they exhaust them. So after they exhaust, then they have to come back again to mortal planet in order to again start their journey, right? So they have to come back again. So what Krishna is saying is they will only get repeated birth and death. It seems like a punishment, right? He's saying a fact, because they also want that. Because they also want heavenly sense pleasure, then in the way in which this universe is created, there is no way you can forever enjoy here. Well, that's the way someone will challenge, you know. If Krishna really wants to give us free will, why didn't he create a world where we can forever enjoy without him? Somebody may say, you know, he has some self-interest. Why? That world is spiritual world. He created that world. But we want a world without him. Right? So that's the problem. But that such world doesn't exist. So So, because everybody wants to become Krishna, then automatically, you know, it doesn't exist. So we'll read last six lines. The purport is that instead of being elevated to spiritual world,
from which there is no longer any possibility of coming down, one simply
revolves
in the cycle of birth and death on higher and lower planetary systems. One should better take to the spiritual world to enjoy an eternal life full of bliss and knowledge, and never return to this miserable material existence.
Mm. So Prabhupada tells, maybe in this purport or somewhere, he says it's like a Ferris wheel, giant wheel, right? Sometimes we go up, we are so excited, and the moment we go up, we know we are going to fall down and we will be so nervous. So it's like that, you know, we keep going up and down, but you know, we don't really go to the final destination. So this is also, you know, that's why devotees are considered very sumedesha. Verse in Bhagavatam, it says that people who take to Sankirtan movement, they are sumedesha, means most intelligent. But whereas Krishna says, who declares people who worship demigods as Alpamedasha, means less intelligent. It's the same word. Right? So most intelligent people, they want to get the best. Where is every selfish actually? It's a bona fide selfishness. Devotional service is bona fide selfishness, bona fide sense gratification. Actually once, I was connecting to one lecture. So Srila Prabhupada was, Bhakti Charu Maharaj was telling in yesterday's lecture, right? He was telling that Prabhupada was very concerned about prasadam, you know, whether devotees are getting quality prasadam. Even though he was sick, he was not eating prasadam. He was concerned checking with the kitchen manager, you know, are you preparing nice prasadam? Then somebody said, you know, they are not preparing. Then he said, no, you know, you have to make arrangements. Then Maharaj was saying that's because prasadam is the only sense gratification. So better they give nice prasadam, so, you know, satisfies the urges. So like that, you know, devotional service is a bona fide sense enjoyment. Because it's done by pleasing Krishna, Krishna's senses. But that's the way soul enjoys. So we are actually in one verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, it says Swarthagatim. Prahlad Maharaj says to Narasimhadev or maybe Hiranyakashipu that these people, they are like blind people, they are falling into the ditch following the blind people. Like how blind people follow the blind, and because the blind cannot lead anywhere, they fall into the ditch, right? Like that, these people are going to hell in the sense enjoyment, in the all fruitive activities. They don't know what is swarthagatim, means what is the selfish goal.
What is the right selfish goal?
Yeah, exactly. Swartha, you know, that swartha word generally we know to be very negative, right? We think, you know, oh yeah, swartha means it's
selfish.
We feel somebody is really, you know, blaspheming us. If somebody says, I'm very selfish, right? It's not good. But the real swartha is talking about Prahlad Maharaj. Real swartha is a real self-interest. You know, what is really needed for the soul, the food for the soul. So when we invest in that, then it's real swartha, real selfishness. And that is actually complete selflessness in long term. So that's why, as I mentioned, initial years, it feels like, you know, somebody who is serious about Krishna consciousness will be very rigid about chanting and, you know, following regulative principles and following reading and things like that. So somebody new may feel like, you know, this person is very selfish, you know. Maybe at that time, because of the Kanishta stage, right, we don't even know how to relate with other devotees. So we're just focused on our devotional service. So others may find us, may, like, you know, little bit offensive or maybe kind of, you know, we cannot relate with them properly. So it seems like, you know, they are very selfish, you know, they just care about their spiritual growth. But that's what is needed in order to come to a particular stage where we can start giving to others and we can relate with others better. And so it may seemingly it's selfishness, but it's said like it's like green mango and ripe mango, right? You know, it's mango in the preparation. And also, you know, this very nice principle that a person who rigidly follows the principles of pure devotional service is as good as doing pure devotee actually. That's how great acharyas view them. This is a criteria. A person who rigidly follows the principles of pure devotional service is as good as pure devotee. In the sense that it's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of time, it's going to fully manifest. But they are on the right track with determination. Of course, they still have some, you know, nuances and some things, some conditioning and sometimes behavior which we feel, you know, it's not appropriate, and sometimes because of mode still they do like that. But you know, what is the essence of them? What is essence? See, when we see somebody, right? Generally, you know, after some time we become familiar and start seeing, you know, so many other flares of that person. But when you step back, maybe, you know, take a step back and maybe go away from that person for a few months, or somehow, you know, they leave the place or something. But when you remember the person, what do you remember of the person? You remember the essence, actually, you know. What is their intensity of their devotional service? That's what you remember.
Sincerity.
Yeah, sincerity, and how they have taken up devotional service is determined. It's a particular type of flavor of their devotion, actually. Now, because everybody has individual rasa with Krishna. So that's why sometimes it's surprising, you know. Prabhupada gave so many lectures, so many classes. So many Prabhupada disciples, they keep continually giving so many classes, so many other ISKCON disciples. After that, now second generation, so many of them are, you know, Gauranga Prabhu, Govinda Prabhu, and senior Brahmachari, so senior disciples are giving so many classes, so many. Then I was thinking, it's the same subject, you know, how can so many people talk and still so much matter is there? But if you see, everybody has a different, what to say, mood. Their rasa is different. You know, and right, the rasa, once you taste that, you feel like you just want to keep hearing from that particular person all the time, because you get that taste. Now, so once you, for example, I was listening to one very nice lecture, Vishakalila Mataji forwarded, San Jose, it happened. It's given by two brahmacharis, initially they were brahmacharis, now they are gurusas, from New York. You know, they are pioneering Western preaching to the Western people, because all over the US now it's all Indian devotees coming to all the temples. So nobody, Westerners are not getting attracted. It's all become Indian ISKCON basically. So they are trying to revolutionize preaching towards Western people. You know, what should be the outlook? How should we communicate with them? You know, like that. So these people are spearheading that effort. Devotees, so they are welcome to come to San Jose, and they gave a very nice class about art of cooperation. Yeah, you can listen to it. It's very nice, you know, very unique way of presentation. So there, you know, if you see the two people, right? One person is Sachinandan Maharaj disciple, other person is Radhanath Maharaj disciple. And, you know, one person is very outgoing and very much, you know, engaging everything. Other person is very, very internal. He's very much about internalizing things and working on one's own sadhana, and that should be our main focus, and that's how everything comes about. Other person is more like, you know, of course practice devotional, but still knows how to deal with external things. It's too different, and this person is more like, you know, outgoing, and this person is more calm, given a chance he'll speak, and that's all, he'll keep to himself. And it's very different personalities, but yeah, extrovert and introvert, but both of them are so potent, actually. Now I felt, when I'm listening to him, I felt I wish he gives the whole class. When I listen to him, I feel I wish he gives the whole class. But they're sharing, so different moods are coming out. Then I felt actually it's the mood is coming out. The mood of their bhakti, that's what is preaching. What is Mukundatha Prabhu once shared? Preaching is sharing your rasa with Krishna. Whatever rasa you feel with Krishna, you share it. That's what is preaching. So according to our realization, we share. Art of Cooperation, given by Rasanath Das and Hari Prasad Das. It should be in ISKCON Silicon Valley website, one of the top lectures. It's very, very nice, you know, dynamic way. Basically, they engaged the audience, they made them solve the problem, you know, ask them questions and chat, you know, practical, very, very practical. She was telling about the new style of preaching, so she was telling about, you know, we can adopt some principles. Okay, so we'll go to the next very crucial verse, text number 22. Now it's talking about devotees, you know. So why do people worship demigods? We discussed this in earlier verses, earlier chapters, right? Why do people go to demigods?
Quick
results. And but the same results Krishna also can give, right? Because Krishna only gives through them. So that's why text number 22, Krishna is saying, my devotees, they don't worry about maintenance because I take care of them. So they don't need to go to demigods. Text number 22, he says, Ananyas chintayanto maam ye jana paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yoga kshemam vahamyaham. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, what happens? To them, I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. How many of you read this verse earlier?
I heard.
Harivilas Prabhu, okay. You heard it? You also heard, right? Okay, everybody heard. Almost, you heard? Wow. Yeah, very, very, you know, crucial verse where Krishna promises his reciprocation towards his pure devotees. So we'll read from like last 6 lines. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches.
Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord Jesus. This is called yoga. In the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material condition of life. Kshema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga. And when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable condition of life.
So Prabhupada defines 3 terms here: yoga, kshema and vahamiyaham, all of them. So yoga is that devotee will approach Krishna, that bhakti yoga basically, connection with Krishna. Yoga means connecting with the Supreme. So devotee does devotion service in connection with Krishna. And in return, what does Krishna do? He does kshema. Kshema means he offers merciful protection. So protection means that the devotee is not, basically he protects his Krishna consciousness. And the next one, Vahami, protects Vasudeva, and then he protects him from falling down. So he elevates him to appropriate transcendental situation, and also after he is elevated, he protects him from falling down to miserable condition life. So this is Krishna's promise. So now some of the things we may want to understand clearly is, what is Krishna's protection? What does he protect actually? Anybody has any thoughts? What does he protect? No, okay, he protects us from going into Maya. Only we are talking about people who are pure devotees already, right? So he's protect them from falling down. Yeah, that's what is the point. He protects their Krishna consciousness. But we also see people, like devotees who are so-called dedicated, suddenly meeting an accident, leaving the body, and so is it not, Krishna is not protecting them? Okay, so he's wanting them more quicker. So point is,
you can't see the full picture.
Actually, we should not depend on the bodily platform. We should not calculate the
problem. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So protection is always for the Krishna consciousness. He's going to protect the Krishna consciousness. So we all agree. So we should also relate to that way when Krishna when obstacles come in our devotional life also. So that's how we should see them. So suddenly, if suppose we encounter an accident or some injury or something, we cannot suddenly start saying, okay, Krishna is not protecting me. I'm chanting so-called 16 rounds or I'm trying to chant. Where is Krishna's protection? Right? We cannot ask like that. Because we know what is Krishna protecting. Krishna is protecting our Krishna consciousness. So even in this incident, somehow am I chanting? Or rather, it's our free will. How we can turn this incident to bring us closer to Krishna? It's a test. So in this incident, such and such accident, such and such injury, how are we going to take more shelter of Krishna? If you do it, then it's basically yoga maya. It's going to bring us closer to Krishna. But if you take it as an opportunity that, Krishna is not reciprocating, he's not hearing, he's so busy with so many gopis and gopas, what will he hear anyway? If you think like that, then yoga maya, it becomes mahamaya, and we give an excuse to slacken. We give an excuse to ourselves to slacken in our devotional service. So devotee should always think, a practicing devotee should always think, any incident, how it can bring us closer to Krishna. You should always think, how can this bring us more closer? If we cannot see it like that, many times we cannot see it, because always tests are beyond us. When we cannot see it, then we can approach somebody who is more experienced or more realized, then they can help us see through the situation. Because after years later, when we look back, we feel right? How it helped us so much. So, after I came to Krishna consciousness, after 1 year, 2 years, I had the realization, whatever I had to go through that 1 year, where so much trauma I went through here, all alone, before marriage, so much, I couldn't find any solution. That time it was miserable, right? I couldn't handle, what it is. I couldn't find the end to it and things like that. But later when I came to Krishna consciousness, then I felt, that's the way I could have come. Otherwise, I had everything, so-called. There was no need to worship God, no need to take shelter, nothing. Even so-called in India, when I was there also, when I was some, there was some kind of difficulties came, I used to go to some temple here and there, pay like that, you know, just, you know, because that's our culture. When difficulty was there, I used to pray and go to work. It's nothing from the heart, nothing so intense. So then I felt, you know, the way I had to, it was very perfect for me actually, you know. So I didn't have an option. All the options are exhausted. I didn't have an option but Krishna, so then I took it up seriously. Otherwise probably, you know, it would have been very, very slow journey. It's Krishna's mercy. So, yeah, this one other point this Prabhu was sharing in his class, that we actually don't know, we cannot plan our life properly. In the sense, you know, we, even in devotional service, we may have certain aspirations. Prabhu Mataji was telling, Prabhu likes to preach. So we have certain aspirations, we have certain, you know, ways we want to serve Krishna. Prabhu was telling, actually behind all of this is Krishna. He is arranging everything. He may actually put us through situations in a way that we can actually preach to more people than we could imagine. You know, somehow he could create situations like that, that, you know, beyond our imagination, we could reach out to people. That's the point he was saying. Maybe he's sharing from his personal experience. But that's the point I thought, you know, because we feel, I have certain plan, Krishna, you know, what's happening, you know, you're not listening to me, you're not sharing, I really want to serve you. You know, why, you know, it's why certain thing is not working. Then this one particular story is there about this particular verse. Who knows this story? We discussed that in the class, right? Arjuna Acharya story. Anybody can share?
Arjuna Acharya is a devotee of Krishna. He is a very poor devotee, Brahmana. He, every day he goes for yacha, begging, he will beg for the prasadam. And whatever he gets, he will take, bring home and he will eat. One day he was reading the shloka and he was reading this translation that my transcendental
Vahamiyaham.
I carry what they lack and I preserve the, what they have. He sees the word I carry. Then he thought that no, how can Krishna come
personally
to give? It's not right. Then he striked it off and he went to.
He said it's not him personally, it's through his energies, he wrote. And then he went.
Then he went for the begging. But he couldn't find anything there. No one gave anything. Meanwhile, while he was outside the house, two beautiful boys, they carried all the groceries and the required things for the household. They brought everything and they knocked the door of this Brahmana, Arjunacharya's door. The wife of Arjunacharya, she came out and she asked, who are you? Then they said, your husband sended these groceries for you. Then she asked, who are you? Then they said, we are the disciples of your husband. Then she said, I don't know that there are some disciples for my husband. Then when they were unloading the load, she saw
marks
of hitting, some kind of hitting cane. Marks on their back, and she inquired what happened. Then they said, we said something and your husband didn't accept it and he punished us like this. Then she said, oh no, this is how cruel is my husband. Come inside, I will cook some shadam and I will offer it to you. You please take that and then you can. In the she asked them to come in and they took prasadam. But meanwhile he came. But wife was telling Arjunacharya, you are so arrogant. Why did you? They are so beautiful young boys. Why, how did you get a heart to punish them so harshly? Then Arjunacharya couldn't understand anything. What is this? Meanwhile, when she wanted to introduce them, but they were disappeared already. So Arjunacharya went back, and while he was in the evening time, when he was reading the book again, he saw that strikes were gone. Then he realized that the strikes which I made on the book, was directly, these are the words of Krishna. That means if I strike down, they are nothing but Krishna himself. And whatever he said is right, I was wrong. In that way he concluded, got that conclusion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So Krishna personally took the strike on his back. And he also personally delivered, right? Personally, so personally delivered. So he's telling, you know, I personally deliver. So it's a very nice story about this verse.
So,
I don't know whether he's in our disciplic succession, but yeah, Prabhupada tells his story. Okay. So this is a very nice, you know, promise Krishna is giving, right? I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So even our services, right, like particular instruction we might have given, we might have gotten from our spiritual master or somebody else asking us to do some service, we may feel, oh, I don't have these abilities, I don't have these qualities, I don't have this propensity, no, I'm not used to doing this. We feel so much lacking. But if you just follow the instruction, then Krishna will carry, you know, he'll provide what is needed. And once we have attained a particular thing, he's going to preserve that. Make sure it doesn't fall down. That's how we saw how Bharat Maharaj consciousness, he remains all through his three lifetimes, right? Through the deer and through his Jada Bharat, he remembers his consciousness. Even like Gajendra, he remembered even as an elephant his consciousness. So like that, he preserves the consciousness. And sometimes it's not like immediately we are born, we may not remember it. Appropriate time in life, when situation is ripe, you know, when the reactions are, no, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, right? Tesham tva antagatam papam. When one is cleansed of purified reaction, that's when they can take up devotion service with determination. So when that particular time arrives in the life, that's when the Krishna consciousness is now, it's like a dry grass. So once the light is given, it burns. So when that time comes, then the Krishna consciousness is revealed to that person. Until that time, it's subdued and it's hidden. So that's why sometimes we wonder, you know, why I came at 40 years, why that person comes at 20 years, why that person, right? It's all, you know, what reactions a particular person has to go through before they start taking it up seriously in their life. And it's also told that a person who takes up devotion service very seriously, very sincerely, with determination in one life, it means that they are continuing from previous life. It's not the first life. But sometimes some people are very struggling and very, it takes long time, that means maybe probably this is their first time. No, so that's so many differences are there. So any things you want to share about this particular point? Or any questions or comments or any examples? So there are so many examples, like even Srila Prabhupada himself was protected from death actually. No, in one verse in 7th canto, Srila Prabhupada says that because now the devotee is using this body to serve the Lord, sometimes Krishna even protects the body if needed for the service of the Lord. So in that purport it's given like that. Then Prabhupada says, you know, I have experienced that. Even in Jaladuta he suffered 3 heart attacks. Then he said Krishna saved me from there. After that in New York again he faced another third heart attack. So generally, and then he had some other incident also, another disease or something like that. So he said generally 3 heart attacks means a person is gone, Prabhupada said. But somehow Krishna saved me. And he told everybody, please pray for me. You know, please pray to Narasimha Dev if he wants me to stay here. You tell him that our spiritual master has not completed his mission. Let him stay. Because that's when actually Krishna consciousness was starting. So he couldn't imagine that he will leave, because it's just not even 1 year like that. So he said, my spiritual master has not finished his mission. If you so desire, Narasimha Dev, please let him be here. So then he said, Narasimha Dev, listen to your prayers. Then he protected. Another incident was about Narasimha Dev, how even modern day Narasimha Dev is reciprocating with devotees. So one incident happened not that one. So in Juhu Beach, Prabhupada had a big fight, right, to get the land. You know, they got the land, the person is Sethi, I think. Person who sold the land, he sold to 3 people, other people. Actually, finally, he didn't even own the land, actually. So it became a big controversy and so much law, you know, especially once you go to the court, you know, you'll never get it. So it's gone. So Prabhupada actually mentally wanted to offer this, or rather, you know, that was his desire, right? He wanted to offer this property, or rather this temple, to the lordships, Radha Ras Bihari. So he, that is his, you know, service to the Lord, and it was getting hampered, and so many obstacles, so much fight he had to go through. He fought, he said, you know, okay, let's fight now. He said, you know, Arjuna, Krishna asked Arjuna to fight, right? Sometimes pure devotee tolerates, but sometimes he had to fight. So he said, you know, it's our fight now, we should fight on behalf of Krishna. So he went through so much, but that person started giving so much trouble, so many issues, so many things. Then suddenly one time what happened, that they got a news on the telephone, Prabhupada, he got a call and he was on the phone. And he heard the news and Prabhupada was jubilant. Something he heard. Then devotees asked what happened. He said, you know, Sethi passed away. He got a heart attack, he passed away. Then Prabhupada was like, oh, but it's okay, you know, it was a good fight. You know, he was laughing like that and he said it's a good fight. Then Maharaj Indrajit was explaining this lecture. He was telling, you know, what will people think, you know, pure devotees enjoying that somebody is dying. What is this? What such a acharya is this? Then he was telling that Prabhupada said that, no, actually I pray to Narsingadev, please take care of this demon. This demon is harassing me, it's not allowing me to do his proper service. No, please take care of this. How Narsimhadev takes care of Hiranyakashipu, like that I prayed to him. So he took care of him. Then he said, because Hiranyakashipu, whoever he kills also get liberated, so he got mercy actually. So that's the mercy he got, you know, like that. So that's how he protected his, you know, Prabhupada's service, Lord. Anybody has any realizations, experiences, like how you felt Krishna protected you, you know, kind of preserved, or based on a situation, like, you know, maybe if you went there, it would have been negative for Krishna consciousness, but somehow, you know, you were averted, and something like that, you know, anything you want to share in these lines, which can deepen our realization about this topic.
Always not so. I still like to think, but automatically I start coming here. Somehow or the other, something will happen and it'll go. Like a couple of weeks back, for chapter 9, I wanted to attend the whole of chapter 9. First week itself, I missed and I was feeling very sad, right? I was telling my wife, oh man, because next week she had a plan, and the week after she had. I was telling Sahu Prabhu also, you know, I wanted to do that. But then something happened, her plan got cancelled. Then the following week, you had to leave somewhere, and that class also got cancelled. So I was telling, see, that worked out.
Yeah, sometimes I also feel if I'm eager to listen to the class, and somehow I couldn't make it, class gets cancelled, I'll become happy. It's like, okay, I didn't miss it, but I also feel others are missing it, but it's okay, you know, I didn't miss it. That's our, you know, rasa. Anybody wants to share? Mataji, you want to share anything? You know, maybe you can share through your experience with your health issue, right? How it actually eventually helped you come closer, right?
Dance in the temple, that was like a real good opportunity. I could let the kids dance for Krishna, not only myself, I'm letting others also dance for Krishna. So I feel that is the greatest of. So every step, whatever I'm going through in my life, it is getting closer to Krishna. So I feel I'm more closer to Krishna, and I wanted to learn more. And I think Srimad Bhagavatam also I'm attending because of Krishna's mercy. Everything. I was talking to you, right? I can't. But that was also God. Like, it was like after that, I don't know what happened. All the situations, they were like towards me. Like, I got an opportunity to come to the class.
So, how are you getting opportunity now? What happened? Schedule, something happened?
My music teacher, she told that to come to her class on Mondays, not on Saturdays.
Okay. She only tell on her own.
Yeah, she told on her own.
Because Krishna decided, no, she is not going to make a decision, so I'm going to change her life.
And she told that we have a slot on Mondays at 3:30, I was so happy. I was jumping up and down because she didn't have a slot on Mondays. I'm taking them on Saturdays. So now I got the slot. So I was like, I'm jumping up and down. I was like, you wanted me to learn and listen to your Krishna Kadanta. That's why you gave me. So like every incident, it's building up confidence.
Very nice.
I feel like my steps towards Krishna is increasing.
Yeah.
Someday I'll be very near.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, first time I saw Mataji, that time I don't know whether you delivered already or you had a small, I think you had a small baby, I think. First time I saw her and, she was so, I think they came to Krishna consciousness after that baby, right? Born. But somehow when she came, they took it up so seriously. I don't know the situation in their life, I don't know why, I don't know what, whether because of misery or something or whatever it is, they both naturally got attracted to Krishna consciousness and she had great intensity, desire to practice it. But then now she realizes that she has a small child, to take care. So all her attention has to go there. So in the heart she was feeling pain, how will I do it now? But somehow I could sense that in her actually. And that time I prayed somehow, if I can help her in a journey. Somehow Krishna gave me that opportunity to fulfill my desire. So now I'm able to serve her. A very, very sincere, devotee. So I'm happy to, we are happy to help you on your journey. Very nice. So, yeah. Yeah, please share. Yeah. Very nice, yeah. Very nice. Yeah. Yeah, so many ways, we should develop this. That's why, devotees are meant to be introspective. We should watch how Krishna is, helping us. Otherwise, being devotees, we cannot perceive Krishna. We should be very introspective and see, at every small step, Krishna is helping me in so many ways. Then we can feel the presence of the Lord through all this, so-called material things and even through our devotional incidents, through devotees. So whenever a devotee helps us, it's through Krishna's mercy coming through them, right? So we should see that Krishna's presence in our life, then we feel always connected with him. It's not like, when I hear the class or when I do kirtan, when I chant also, anyway, we don't feel his presence. But when I hear, do kirtans or hear a class, we feel more his presence. But on our own, when we are at home, we are somewhere, we are in our own world. But when we, that's what Rama Padmanabha says, tune in. We have, so many channels, right? Radio. And Krishna has a particular channel. So if we tune into that frequency, then we can see his signals. I'm directing you, go here, go there, do this. But if you are on different, some pop music or some other channel, then Krishna will not be able to sense what he's trying to help us, how he's trying to help us. Yeah. Especially, the greatest mercy. What is greatest mercy of Krishna? What is the greatest blessing Krishna can give anybody? Among all so many things, right? We have holy name, we have so many things, gifts like prasadam, service, so many things. Hearing about him. No, more than that, association of devotees is the greatest gift Krishna has given us. So if somebody has that association of devotees, that means Krishna has showered their blessings on them. And if somebody, at the same time, opposite is true. This very nice point, statement I heard in Radhanath Maharaj lectures once. One time he said, if somebody, listen to this carefully, he says, if somebody takes pleasure in offending devotees, you can understand that this is a person Krishna has severely withdrawn mercy from. If somebody takes pleasure in offending devotees, you should understand that this Krishna has withdrawn his mercy severely from this person. You understand, like in his, because he is going down the drain, that person. And Krishna is upset with him and he said, okay, I'm not going to worry about you, you do whatever you want. That's all. And that person keeps taking more and more pleasure in offending devotees and that's all. He has to get a severe reaction, something to at least come to his senses. Otherwise, it may have to take it up in next life. So it's very, very, you know, devotees are so dear to Krishna, even so-called new person. That's why Radhakrishna Prabhu always says, you know, we cannot judge the Krishna consciousness we have, somebody has who is sitting next to us. We cannot judge. We don't know, you know. Even Dhruva Maharaj's mother, stepmother, Suruchi, no, she offended Dhruva Maharaj when he was 5 years, but at that time he was not even manifesting symptoms of pure devotees. But he offended at that time, but she had to face a reaction because eventually he became a pure devotee. So somebody may see, okay, no, when I am advanced, then when I get offended, then only reaction will be there. But you know, this is so subtle, the signs, that even if I am not advanced, but you know, I am going to become a pure devotee, then if somebody offends me, Krishna takes it seriously. Yeah, exactly. We should not offend anybody. We should not, ideally, you know, we should not advise anybody. But it's, we are so freely, we give advice. And yeah, advice, and actually it says that, you know, unless unless one somebody says, very nice question, I think I read in Facebook, somebody asked one person, devotee, what if we feel discrepancy in certain particular person's, you know, execution of devotional service, what should we do? Then he said, first you should ask yourself, is he your disciple? You should ask. Most of the times it's not, so you keep quiet. Then other point is, okay, then whatever actually you see, discrepancy is actually a reflection of your own actions. That's the point Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, you know, the faults you see in others is actually the you yourself are honeycombed with those faults. That's why you're able to see in others. I remember I mentioned once when I was reading Yamuna Mataji's book, right? She had a particular characteristics where Dinatarani Mataji was sharing about Yamuna Mataji. Her exchange or interaction with Yamuna Mataji, she felt she never knew that somebody is envious of her. She couldn't detect it. She, as a friend, she could see, you know, they are envious of you, they are trying to pull you down, they are doing so many strategy to, you know, hurt you. She was telling, but she couldn't sense it. Then she felt that's because she never had envy. She doesn't know what it means to be envious. It's a very nice example, right? So whenever we feel, you know, somebody is not doing properly and somebody is not following the spiritual master's instructions properly, somebody is not loyal, so many ways, so many things we find in others, we should introspect and ask us to what extent we have the same faults. Actually, we have it, that's why we are seeing it. If we don't have it, then we see everybody is pure devotee actually.
How are people seeing their own fault in demonstrate that the Guru says, okay, Yudhishthira Maharaj, please go and find a bad person in this city. So Yudhishthira Maharaj goes and says, comes back and says, there's not even one bad person. Everybody has some good qualities in it. So he says the same thing, go and find one good person in this whole thing, so Duryodhana. He comes back and says, there's not even a single good person. Everybody has some qualification.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
So you see.
Very. But does it mean that we should not look even in bad qualities? Like, for example, not bad qualities, but we notice some faults, right? We should not even notice anything?
No, it's not blind, right? We cannot artificially do it. That's the thing. When we are elevated like Yamuna Mataji, pure of envy, then we'll see like.
But again, we should try, right?
No, we should not try to see. We should try to purify that qualities goes away. So when we see, so we see it naturally, right? It's not like we close your eyes, okay, I didn't see it now. You know, we see it. So when we see it, immediately we should discuss with wife or, you know, somebody else. Like, you know, okay, this point we heard. That when we see certain quality, that means we also have this quality. So where do you think I have it? So can we analyze and figure out? Where do you think you have it? Where do you think I have it? No, can we work it out? No, then we'll do that way. That helps us in purifying ourselves. Right?
What if I see in my kids, I see something, then they're doing something wrong. Then how do I handle that?
Yeah, that's a role of a parent or a teacher, even a spiritual master. Our Guru Maharaj gave one lecture, he tells about this point. He says that a spiritual master and a parent and teacher should have one good eye and one bad eye. They should see what is good in the child and encourage that. They should also see what is bad and try to, you know, stop them from doing that. They should have that. That's the role of a person who is giving guidance. They should have it. Otherwise, you know, it doesn't help, right? Spiritual master also has to do it. That's why spiritual master has the authority for the disciples. But within peers, within devotees, within seniors and Narayana's Prabhu, all those people, we cannot say, you know, oh, there is a discrepancy or something like that. We cannot say all those things. Okay. So, I think we should continue. So, text
one question you said, in, let's say at our level, the similar level, so devotees
peers
are working together, for example, temple. So, how, so which kind of action we are saying the devotee is doing wrong? Like either they are doing service wrong or they're, I don't know, means which kind of action we are pointing out here?
So, you, okay.
I mean, let's say, for example, I just put clarify my question. Let's say, two devotees are working together for any specific task. One knows very nicely, another don't know. So first devotee should correct the other one, guide them, right?
Mm.
No, don't do this way, do this way. This is the right way to solve this current whatever.
Mm.
So
that's okay. That's about service.
Then which thing we are talking about?
No, these are about the qualities, or we are talking, commenting about their attitude towards devotional service, or attitude towards devotees, attitudes, you know, assumptions based on their position. Like, for example, these days, right, rumors, everybody is saying, oh, you are this side, you are that side, without anything, without any checking, nothing, right, suddenly they put a bucket. See, that's very, very offensive. Very offensive, and if you buy into it and do it, then you know it's very, very, very offensive. We even discussed this with our spiritual master. He told, yeah, I heard a lot of offenses are being going on there, you know, be careful, like that. He was telling, you know, so yeah, so dangerous actually, you know. So other than that, this is very blatant what's happening, unfortunately. But other than that, you know, like subtly, you know, we think suddenly, you know, okay, this person didn't wear a sari for Mangalarti. You know, see, oh, what a, you know, what type of devotion is she doing, you know. We don't know what happened, you know. Maybe she got up just last minute and she was rushing to come to see Krishna rather than, you know, spend time wearing a sari. What is her consciousness? We don't have it. We cannot judge. So, if you make a comment, if you feel like that about that person, it's offense. Of course, you know, at least Kali Yuga, mentally what we think about other person is not counted. We are running out. No, but at least, you know, verbally if you say, and if you physically you do something, it becomes an offense. At least Kali Yuga, we are pardoned for mental offenses. But the mind, mentally whatever is there, it's going to come sooner or later in actions. That's the whole point. It's going to build up and it's going to force us to act like that. The next time we will probably not even say Haribol to that person because she doesn't wear sari to Mangala. Okay, so text number 23.
येपि अन्य देवता भक्ता यजन्ते श्रद्धयान्विता तेपि मामेव कौन्तेया यजन्ति अवधिपूर्वकम्.
Those who are devotees of other gods and you worship them with faith actually worship only me, O son of Kunti, but they do so in a wrong way. It's the same point Krishna is saying, who are worshipping demigods, they worship me, but they are doing it avidipurvakam, means very indirectly. Prabhupada says, actually the purport is, actually they are giving bribes. It's like that. So there is a government officer and there are sub-officers. In order to achieve certain particular thing in the government, we want to bypass the rules. So we give some bribes to the local officers. So that we get it done quickly. So, you know, we want to get quick results from demigods. So we bribe the demigods saying, you know, okay, can you please do it for me? So that's Krishna is saying, it's a wrong way. He doesn't like it. He's saying very clearly, I don't like it. So let's read the last four lines. The officers and directors.
The officers and directors are engaged as representatives of the government. And to offer some bribe to the officers and directors is illegal.
This is stated.
Stated here as avidipurvakam. In other words, Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of a demigod.
Yeah, very clear, right? So we'll go to the next verse where Krishna says, then, no, why is it like? Because he is the enjoyer of all sacrifices.
Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhureva cha na tu mam abhijananti tatve na tascheyanti te
chavanti. I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Therefore, those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature falls down. So the point why people who worship demigods go through the cycle of birth and death is because they don't properly understand Krishna's position. They think he is equal to demigods, or demigods are as powerful as Krishna. No, there are two ways we can offend the Lord. Either we can bring him to our level, or we can raise ourselves to his level. Both of where are atheistic. So the same point. So they are offensive towards the Lord. So that's why Krishna is saying they have to go through this cycle of birth and death. So let's read last four lines. Less intelligent persons, however, without knowing.
Less intelligent persons, however, without knowing this fact, worship demigods for temporary benefit. Therefore, they fall down to material existence and do not achieve the desired goal of life. If, however, anyone has any material desire to be fulfilled, he had better pray for it to the Supreme Lord, although that is not pure devotion, and he will thus achieve the desired
result. So, you know, even if we have material desires, better we approach only Krishna. No, we should check ourselves. If at all we have this, upbringing of worshipping demigods, so-called, we don't know who are the demigods, right? Of, the culture we have been brought up. Sometimes we are afraid of giving up the culture, right? So now we have this knowledge, so we should check ourselves. Why am I continuing this? Now I know Krishna is the source of everything. No, why I have to still do it? Why am I doing it? We should ask ourselves. Is it because I don't have faith in the statements of Krishna? I don't have enough faith in Krishna? Or why? Because if we, without checking, without asking ourselves, we continue doing it, then Krishna is not going to give us the faith to surrender to Him. It's not. We are also always going to go in that cycle again and again. So as Krishna says, even though we have taken up this pure devotion service and the path which can lead us completely out of material existence, we will not get full benefit if we cannot get out of this worship of demigods. Yeah, worship them.
Worship them so that we can serve Krishna. That way we can.
Yes, we can respect them in their relationship with Krishna. Like Shiva, we can worship him as the greatest Vaishnava. If that's the mood, that's okay. But now, without knowing, not because every year I do some Ganesha puja, so I keep continuing doing. We don't know why I'm doing, thinking that maybe. So we should ask ourselves. I'm saying, nobody can. It's our free will. Krishna also will not come and interfere. No devotees also will not interfere. They will leave us if we are very adamant. But we should check, where we are heading. So text number 25. Yanti deva vratha devan pitrin yanti pritru vratha bhutani yanti bhuteja yanti mantyajinopi mam. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to ancestors. Those who worship the ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me. Very clear. So it's not that I worship, Ganesha or somebody, Saraswati, that I will also go, I will go to Krishna still. Somebody challenges, okay, whole life I worship Saraswati, but still I want to go to Krishna. How is it? Your desire is to worship Saraswati, so you'll be with her only whenever you go, right? Wherever you go. Right? If you desire to live with Krishna, then you will be with Krishna. It's very, very practical. Because Krishna gives the birth according to our consciousness in this life. So, we'll read last six lines. It is not rather 10 lines. It is very easy to understand.
Through this important verse that if by simply worshipping the demigods one can achieve the heavenly planets, or by worshipping the pitas achieve the pita planets, or by practicing black arts achieve ghostly planets, why can the pure devotee not achieve the planet of Krishna or Vishnu? Unfortunately, many people have no information of these sublime planets where Krishna and Vishnu live, and because they do not know of them, they fall down. Even the impersonalists fall down from the Brahma Jyoti. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore distributing the sublime information to the entire human society by simply chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one can become perfect in this life and go back home.
Back to God. So very, very wonderful way Prabhupada presented this, right? So, if you worship demigods, you go to the demigods. If you worship ghosts, you go to ghosts. It's very natural. You worship Krishna, go to Krishna. Why you don't believe it? Right? So nice. And then he says that because people don't have this knowledge, they worship demigods. But fortunately, we have this Krishna conscious movement. It's giving the Hare Krishna mantra. Just by chanting the mantra, one can go back to Krishna. That's what Prabhupada is saying. Actually, one statement Srila Prabhupada gives, that this Krishna consciousness movement is going to save the world in its darkest moment. So as the Kali Yuga advances, it's going to be more and more horrible. But he says, all these people, scientists, everybody, they will realize one day that this Krishna consciousness movement has saved the world in its darkest moment. So now only it's beginning actually, Yesterday Bhaktichari Maharaj was saying, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu predicted that every town and village, his name will be chanted. Now we have not even started this. Prabhupada just started it, right? He just spread it into few countries. and no, in US and few countries, and then his disciples are carrying on now more and more places they are going on now. When Prabhupada left, there were 108 temples, now there are more than 500 temples. We can see how much we have followed this mission, but still we are so far from achieving this, you know, every town and village. There's so many more people are yet to come in so many generations to further this movement. So we are just at the beginning. We are actually, Radhakrishna Prabhu once he told, before he left last time, he told, you like it or not, you are pioneering Krishna consciousness. That means people later on are going to talk about you. They are going to hear your classes. They are going to say, you know, okay, so and so, like how we talk now about Prabhupada disciples like that, you know, they are going to talk about the second, third generation, second generation like that, you know, after everybody. So like that, you like it or not, you are pioneers, you are saying. You better take up, live up to the responsibility. That's what he is trying to say. So we are so fortunate to be given this wonderful presentation. If you get a chance, you hear to that Bhakti Charu Maharaj's classes, he gave about unique contribution of Srila Prabhupada and unique contribution of Mahaprabhu. That's where it makes it very clear how precious is the gift we have been given. You know, especially Srila Prabhupada and also Mahaprabhu. So then you can more appreciate what we have given so that we can be more grateful to practice it. So how do we express our gratitude? By diligently practicing. So at least at this stage, and also Prabhupada says you share it with others and share it among each other. Those are the ways we reciprocate with the gift we have been given. That's the message Srila Prabhupada gives. So we can do that. So we can end here if anybody has any questions or comments.
But pitas also, like for example, pitas is what I says the ancestors, right? If they do good karma, they'll go somewhere. If they do bad karma, they'll go somewhere, right? What is this pita planet?
Yeah, basically based on your attachment, if you are so attached to your ancestors, you want to just stay in the same family, maybe in Vedas there are particular type of yajnas, sacrifices you perform to achieve that particular destination. There's a particular planet, I think it's below the earthly planet, the Pitru planet. Planet where all the ancestors live. So you will go into the particular same lineage. If you are attached to your great grandfather, then the great grandfather will be there. So you will still be with him like that. So basically wherever you are attached, you go there, right? Same thing. So you are attached to your ancestors. Whole life you are meditating on serving your ancestors, preserving the lineage. No, I don't know what, how anybody does it, but no, with that intensity, always thinking about them, then we'll get the destination. So there's a room, rather place for them also. So we want to go back to Krishna. Okay? Okay, we'll stop here. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Jai.